It's like the Republicans come out and they want to, want to investigate Hunter Biden. It's like, okay, it's not running the government, though.
Right.
Okay, it's not going to help me. Investigating Hunter Biden is not going to help me in any way. I would like you guys to solve the war in Ukraine and, you know, help with homelessness, something that could actually, you know. So, but no, I think that it'll send a message for a long time to politicians. Yeah. I think we've made a long way, but I think our job isn't over. I think it begins again tomorrow. It's like, mm-hmm. You don't like the Democrats? Guess what? We need a government.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, man, if you don't operate the government, we're going to vote against you.
Mm-hmm.
You're next. I don't think it's over.
Welcome to Faith in Each Other. I'll be your host, Jordan Howard. And on this show, I want to dive into the minds and the beliefs from people of all walks of life, baby boomers to millennials. No question is off limits as we learn together and go through the journey together of seeing where we, as a society, have gone wrong and where we have gotten it right. I believe that our faith in each other can lead us into a beautiful future. Each episode, I will be joined by Reverend David Williams, my pastor, and his good friend Tom Ingram, as we talk through challenges facing our society today and gain an understanding from different perspectives. Let's dive in. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our show, Faith in Each Other. I am Jordan. I'm your host. And of course, I'm joined by Reverend David Williams and his good friend, Thomas Ingram here. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Good.
And the results are in. After the most recent midterm elections, we here on Faith in Each Other are going to discuss the outcomes. Are we happy? Some of us may be running for the hills, some for presidency. With the announcement of Donald Trump's running for presidency, the Democrats securing the Senate but losing the House, there may be a shock to politicians that can last a generation. Are we happy? Now, I just want to open this conversation with some information. The Republicans retook the House in 2011 with the largest shift of power since the 1930s. However, the Democrats retook the House in 2019, which became the largest shift of power to the Democrats since the 1970s. In the 2022 elections, Republicans took back control of the House, winning a slim majority. What can we expect from these results? I'm going to open the floor to either of you. What can we expect from these results?
Well, I think anytime the party in power gets thrown out, it's a good thing. Anytime the power shifts back and forth, because then it, that's a good thing for corruption. You know, the new people want to come in and fight corruption. So I think it's very important for power to go back and forth. As you know, there was a 40-year period where the Democrats controlled the House for the whole time. And I think that was unhealthy. So I'd love to see power go back and forth and mix it up and have competition.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with Tom. You know, I kind of believe that that's the way it ought to be. You know, everybody gets a turn versus, you know, somebody just sits in the saddle forever. And then everything just belongs to that one group. What came to my mind was I just remember Mayor Daley in Chicago over his reign of being mayor. I mean, it was just Chicago should have just been called Daley, you know, because he
Daley
just
City.
Yeah, it should have been Daley City when I was growing up, because he was just reelected. Nobody else could have a voice. And I think that's dangerous when it comes to democracy. It's not a one party or one person's, you know, arena. And so I kind of look in that midterm, you know, it seems like that's when it changes better. It seems like somehow the House or the Senate seemed like it to me has always changed from the person who's at the president. He has to deal with the others. And then when it's presidential election, it changes again. And so it's almost like the check and balance to make sure we're all, you know, participating versus one group is just leading the charge. Yeah.
Absolutely. Is there anything we've learned, Pastor Dave, from this outcome? Anything you learned in particular?
I was, you know, Jordan, yes, there's something we have learned. It does not matter how we spin it, how the pundits before the election swear that they have the answer. I wish somebody would stand up and say, just be quiet. Let's let the vote play out. But, you know, I think we've learned in these last years, 4 or 5 years, 16, 17, whatever, that you can guess by your expertise or your being an expert in politics, but you don't know what's on the country's mind. You don't know who's coming out. You don't know who is saying this is my turn. And I just saw that in this election one more time. It was going to be one way. Everybody was saying, get ready. And here it goes. I was proud of the American public that people came out to have their voices heard. And maybe we just got to stop believing all these pundits and these experts who could just, you know, want you to just fall in line with whatever they say. No, we have to wait till the day of the election. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Yeah.
Absolutely. Tom, do you agree with Pastor Dave? Is there anything you've learned?
I agree with what he's saying. To me, this was the Tom is wrong about everything election. Everything. No, I'm serious. And nobody's happier about me being wrong than me.
Yeah.
Because I saw a very dark future for the country. And yeah. I'm very, very happy to be wrong. But, you know, it's kind of interesting because we did that thing about Herschel Walker and Fetterman. And it's like I almost sympathize with the American people now where they had to vote for Senate because that was so important because the balance was in. But the other elections, I felt like they really let the politicians have it. And I feel like the people that were the most divisive, their moderate voters turned against them.
Yeah.
And to me, that was the, you know, it's like people say, well, the Democrats won because more people turned out. I don't see that. I see the Democrats won because the Republicans lost their moderates. And my hope is that the politicians, Democrat or Republican, understand that if you say outrageous stuff, our moderates might turn against you and you have no chance if we vote against you. You're done. But I'm really hoping that it intimidates the voters, too, because like the two races I'm focused on is the governor's race in Arizona and the governor's race in Georgia. And my message to the voters is Carrie Lake is a liar.
Right.
She denies the results of the previous elections. And that may or may not be a lie. But the part about her running for governor, that's a lie. Right. She's not running for governor. She's running for talk show host.
Yes.
And the advantage to talk show host, it has no responsibility. It pays way more than the governor. You have no, you know, job hours. The hours are great. You just sit there and talk on this thing and you get paid a bunch of money. But anyway, she did fine. She lost and she's fine. She's happy. Right. She doesn't have to go be governor now. She can go directly to the talk show host job. So she won. You lost. The Republican voters lost. You lost because you bought into her lie. So I hope the voters are a little bit more careful, too. But I think the message that, hey, we can turn on you. If you start criticizing the other people too much, if you start using civil war language, I don't want one. And, yeah, I'll vote for the other party. Heck yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we'll have however many years they're in power. That'll be fine. I have faith in them. Mm. So you know, to me, it was just like everything I was worried about. This election just said, no, it's okay, man. Mm. And I just am so happy about what happened. And again, that Abrams, the Abrams gubernatorial thing, that was key for me, too, because a bunch of Democrats voted for Warnock and not for her.
Right.
Same thing.
You know, Tom, I think, Tom, you hit something on the nail, how the moderate voters, and I didn't watch the day of elections. I watched the day after. I couldn't handle the exact day. I just waited for the next day. But you heard moderates say they were tired of just the jargon. They didn't like the language. They felt like people were just going, getting a spotlight to themselves, not concerned for the country. And I was amazed when I heard some of the moderates speak out like that. I thought that was, wow, I'm finally hearing people saying we're using our own brain. You know, we're not, quote, brainwashed in this election. We choose to think, and we want you to know this. We have your destiny in our hands. And that to me was empowering. You know, I'm going, okay. When people are saying, we got to move on with the business of preserving our country and doing what's next best. You know, what's best. Right. And I just heard, I just was listening to hearing their different interviews, and people were saying, you know, I'm with this party. I'm with this party, but this is where I am today. And it was not that, you know, we're just going to close our eyes and blindly just let whoever say whatever they want to say. They began to think about what's being expressed. And I just thought that was a win for the country. That was a sock into the gut of the people who were just advocating. We have a shoe in, no matter what side it is. We know what we're going to take over, and they're just going to follow us. That didn't happen. That just did not happen. So, yeah.
Absolutely. A significant block of voters split their ballots, choosing to support Republicans who kept some distance from Trump and punished those who courted the MAGA movement. Now, Tom, you mentioned intimidation of politicians and voters alike. How long do you think this intimidation would last?
Well, you know, I think we have seen it for some time. I think we have transferred into, we will just bow down to anybody who kind of flirts with what we believe, but yet have an agenda that may not be our agenda. And I think it took some time, and it's going to take even some more time in the future for us to see if that's going to play out. I heard one Republican, I don't know if it was Ken Buck over in Greeley, but I heard a Republican, and I was so proud of him, say something to the effect. He says, you know, it's time that we get on with the business of the country. He was kind of explaining that, you know, that John Wayne approach, take no prisoners. We have more we have a democracy to run, actually to run, a country to preserve. We are going to have to play with each other, whether we want to or not. We're going to have to play with each other. You know, we're all in this sandbox. And for a moment, it might have felt empowering on either side. Just get a candidate who just kicks sand all in people's eyes and don't care about the rest of the country. I think people said, that's not the democracy we want. I'm not saying everybody, but this politician seemed to say, okay, we're going to have to play a different game. That might have been intoxicating for a moment, and we might have thought we could ram that down people's throats. But he seemed to say even the Republican Party needs to think together of who are we as a party? Who are we? What's our destination as a party, not so much as a person or a 1-2 person? I thought that was speaking much to that intimidation is not the way we want to run our government. That cannot lead us into great places. And I think that's the same for Democrats as well. You don't want just a John Wayne kick butt and run through bills through Congress and through the Senate just because you are who you are. I think it was a wake up call to, we might have went to sleep at the wheel, and we really now have, you know, we can't just continue that way. Yeah,
absolutely. Tom, is there anything you'd like to add to what Pastor Dave said there?
Well, addressing the question of how long the politicians will be intimidated, you know, I think they'll be a lot longer intimidated than the voters will be. But, you know, I think the voters tend to flip back and forth. But I think that this will be something that politicians will look back on for a long time and say, hey, you know, this is just something that we do not want to get involved in, is going that far, because it could hurt us. We don't know if it will or not, but it happened in 2022, so it couldn't happen. It could happen again. It won't last forever, but if you want a number, I would say a decade. I'd say we're good till the 2030s. You know, as far as at least having some fear that if, hey, if I go after the other people that bad, maybe I'll lose something. You know, I think restoring that, I think it'll last a long time. I think we need to keep on going. I think we need to demand that they operate the government.
Right.
You know, it's like the Republicans have come out and they want to investigate Hunter Biden. It's like, okay, it's not running the government, though.
Right.
Okay. It's not going to help me. Investigating Hunter Biden is not going to help me in any way. I would like you guys to solve the war in Ukraine and, you know, help with homelessness, something that could actually, you know. So, but no, I think that it'll send a message for a long time to politicians. Yeah. I think we've made a long way, but I think our job isn't over. And I think it begins again tomorrow. It's like, you don't like the Democrats? Guess what? We need a government. And listen, man, if you don't operate the government, we're going to vote against you. You're next. I don't think it's over, but I don't think the political class will forget what happened there very soon.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the activist wing of the Republican Party may be too enamored by Trump to learn its lesson. The MAGA candidates that lost still have a fanatical fan base. Now, shifting into Trump, is this new 2022 Trump like the 2015 Trump?
I don't think so. I mean, I did watch his speech. I knew he was going to throw his hat in the ring. I had no doubt about that. But the energy for this Trump, and it's almost like he handpicked his people to come to Mar-a-Lago. That was fine. But even there, I think there were people who might have, and this is me taking a leap, the response of him coming back was not this wild euphoria, you know, of the potential of where is this going to take us? I think people began to think, this might not be a good choice right now. And I think the MAGA people still love him. I do not have any question about that. But I just kind of felt there are those who are saying, blind trust in this person right now may not be our best way out. And I think Trump has to think about that, even though he will never speak that to his voice. Trump is one of those persons. I read this editorial that says somewhere Trump crossed over to believe that the full universe operates on him. And his best thing to do is to keep himself as the discussion of the day. And I still believe he believes that. If I can be the headlines of the day, no matter what it's about, he wins. But I think the MAGA people are saying we need more than headlines. I think they love him, but I think some of the people walked away from him because they are saying we want another direction similar to what you're doing, but we don't want a repeat of what you're doing, because with DeSantis being in Florida, DeSantis is the new rising star for today. You know, he's the new face of on the outskirts of the party. I think Trump is aware of that. And right now, that has to bother him, whether it's DeSantis or anyone else. He doesn't look like the guy of 2016. He doesn't look like that guy. He is, I think he's punch drunk. He's been punched a lot. He's been like in a ring being punched, fighting over. And I think that the party is trying to determine how is it going to pivot off of what he started, but in a different way. And I think Trump is having to, he's having to reconcile that, and that just doesn't fit him well. That he just doesn't do well with that. He needs to be front and center. He doesn't share the spotlight with anybody. And when his candidates that he supported didn't, all the candidates that he supported didn't come out and win, I think that was a huge left punch to him. And so I think he's having to rethink about who is his image going to be. Can he keep up that that facade of I'm invincible, everybody will walk and do whatever I say? I think this is a new Trump. I don't say new and improve. I just think it's a new Trump than what we've seen before.
Absolutely. The night before Trump's presidential announcement, a conservative group released a series of polls that showed he was trailing Ron DeSantis in a head-to-head contest by double digits among Republican voters in Iowa and New Hampshire. Those states hold votes early in the Republican nomination process. This run could prove a lot harder for him. Now, Tom, what is your take on the new Trump?
Yeah, no, to me, so the first thing I think Reverend will agree with me on this is when you no longer have the support. I texted my daughter this as soon as he announced. When you no longer have the support of your daughter, then you're done.
Yeah.
And Ivanka has already said she's out.
Yeah.
She won't campaign for him. She won't serve for him. So if you lost your daughter, man, you're hurting. Okay. Mm. But the one thing I can tell you is the best thing about this election is it got him off the scene. Right. And yeah. But because nobody likes a loser. I don't care what it is. Nobody likes a loser. And Donald Trump is now a loser. OK, right. He lost his, according to me, he lost his presidential reelection. He lost the midterms and then he lost the other midterm. So he's a loser now. And but to me, kind of what the Trump thing is, was it was people like me, people like the people who work on the factory floor. We wanted someone to stand up and say, hey, you know what? I don't care what you guys think about my ancestors. My ancestors and my heart are okay. That was the message he was sent to deliver. And now he has. And, you know, it's kind of like time to move on, too. I mean, but that guy is a one-trick pony for me. It's the same message over and over again. The other people are out to get you. Mm-hmm. There's no new Trump. That message is the same. To me, his message is the other people are bad and they're out to get us, the good people of the world. And I think, you know, it was great that the people on my factory floor, their frustration got expressed. But now that we've done that, you know, and it's kind of been registered, maybe it's time to move on to actually operating the government or something like that. But he's a loser now. He's off the stage. That took him off the stage. And that was the best part of it. Best part of the whole election was it took him off the stage.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't think about it when Ivanka, you know, did not show up. He had invited her to be on the stage with him. He asked her to, you know, to be present, and she chose, I'm out of politics. You know, Tom, when you said that, man, that was a huge punch to his ego. Yeah, that was almost a final blow of Dad, things have changed.
Dad, I did it. I did it for you, man. I went out there and I slugged it out for the best I could for you for 4 years.
Yeah.
And I just can't.
I can't do it
again. I just don't want to do this again. It's too ugly.
Yeah.
It's too negative.
Absolutely. According to exit polls from the recent midterm elections, Trump is just not very popular, including in the key states he would need to win to secure the presidency in a general election. In New Hampshire, only 30% of voters said they wanted him to run for president again. Even in Florida, that number only rose to 33%. Now, what can we expect from this new Trump?
I think you should have a talk show host with Carrie Lake. Their show. You get an hour a day, man. Fox News or whatever. Yeah. And then you can just spew. Just say whatever you want. And we can choose not to watch.
Yeah. And that's what it is. We would choose to turn it off. I think this new Trump, though, I think he's going to stay to his guns. I think he's going to stay to the he's going to stay on that one pony show. I can save y'all. I am the savior. I will save you. I don't think he will introduce anything new. I think he will counter any and everything that has happened, whatever, you know, inflation. I will fix the inflation. I think he will. I will finish the wall. I think he's going to try very hard to do that, to show the problems of America lie in one man. And he's going to try to gather people from a one man position. He's also going to use as much force as he can to bully anyone else from getting into the race. If he's got to deal with DeSantis, that's the slug out. But I don't really think he wants to slug with DeSantis. I just don't. But I think he's going to use his platform to poo-poo anybody else who is even considering running. I think that's part of his arsenal. And I'm not a like I said earlier, I'm not a believer in early numbers, percentages. We've learned that doesn't mean anything. 30% in Florida, 25% in New Hampshire. On the day of voting, we don't know where people will come out. Now, we got 2 years. And I just think, you know, I just want to hold on. I hope that some of the people who are yet in office. It's funny how both the Senate as well as the representatives are all both neck and neck with their constituents, you know, 50%, almost 49-49 in both sides. So that still tells us to get the government going, it's going to take both parties. No side has the enough to pass by itself. And to me, that might be good for us right now. It might say, let's get back to business. Let's get back to running this country. And so we're going to have to give some give and takes. And I think that's what I hear people saying. I want people to run the country again. We don't want to be locked down every time in December, you know, the government's going to shut down. People are tired of hearing that. You know, we're going to have to close the government. Can't nobody, we can't work no more. That people are tired of that. And so I and both the House and the Senate are neck and neck with representatives on both sides. And I believe people are saying we wanted that, so y'all would have to work together. And I'm hoping for these next 2 years, we get something done for the betterment of the nation, not for the betterment of a party. I just think he is not. He's not the factor that he was in 2016 and 2015, but he still is a factor. And if anybody count him out, that's dangerous. Right. He's still a factor. He's still a factor.
Absolutely. Tom, what can you expect from this new Trump?
Well, the first thing I would say is I really think President Biden is well positioned to unify the country right now. I know that sounds like a weird thing. But I think in a lot of ways, you know, getting the majority in the House and the Senate kind of hurt him for the first 2 years because he was beholden to the, you know, the more activist portions of his party. But now he can just say, hey, you know, I got a Republican House. I got a compromise. And to me, I think that's much more along his lines of thinking. Yeah. And I think he'll have cover for his own people. And it'll be real close to the majority anyway, so they'll kind of have still a lot of power. So I have great hopes because I voted for him because I believe he was the ultimate compromiser. You know, they went after him because he worked with segregationists, right, with Strom Thurmond and so forth. And I like that. You know, I like that he's able to work with anyone. If he can work Strom Thurmond, he can probably work with, you know, any of the Republicans you got out there now, I would think, you know. So, but to me, I think – there's a tremendous opportunity for him to step into his comfort zone, which is mediator in between the two sides. Right. So, I mean, I have a lot of optimism on that front, too, that we could get some real presidential leadership. But the other thing, too, though, everybody's got to understand that President Biden's credibility shot up as much as President Trump's went down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, having that outcome in your midterms, I don't know what you did, but good job, dude. I mean, you're historically.
Yeah.
You're just good job. So, but I think President Biden is in a tremendous position to mediate between the two parties if he can really see himself that way. And I think that would undermine the new Trump, too, because it would be an example of why you don't act the way you do. But like I say, I don't think it's a new Trump. I think his message is the same. The other people are dangerous.
Yeah,
they want to get you. They hate you because you're a racist. And that's his message. I don't think it's.
Yep.
It's not complicated. It's, you know, it's the basic anti-democratic message. If you want to take it down with democracy, that's the message you give them. Is the other people are dangerous. They shouldn't be allowed to vote. That's his message. So I don't think there is a new Trump. I just think that the new thing about Donald Trump is he's a loser.
Hmm.
He's lost 3 elections in a row.
Yeah.
3, not 2. This is not an aberration. This is a trend. You go with him, you lose. And I really hope that Republican voters, when they get in the poll, when they get in that ballot box, you know, 2 years from now to vote for who gets to be the Republican candidate, that they understand that marking Trump means loss.
Right.
I want to mention DeSantis a little bit. He is a Republican nominee without Donald Trump's worst and most destructive impulses and habits. He doesn't shy away from confrontation, but fights for policies not to prosecute vendettas. He claims he is chosen by God. Now, shifting into these next 2 years, as Pastor Dave mentioned, in your vast knowledge of Scripture, are there any parallels or lessons we can learn from in the present climate that we can take into these next 2 years?
Well, you know, I thought about that question, Jordan. And what comes to my mind? Well, that's the words of God throughout the Scriptures. He's very clear that faith is not to be extended to any one person. He likes to use the term, I will have no other God before me. That's in the commandments. I am your God. And so when we see that at work, there have been kings and leaders, pharaohs, there have been Herods who all wanted to say, we're the answer. We're going to be the leader. We're going to be that new God. And what happens is we just see nations are constantly at war with each other simply because I put in an allegiance to a man versus I put in a faith in God to help mankind. And I think that's the message. I think we somehow it's dangerous when we say one person is the savior. One person is the key person, or is the all of our hope and faith goes into one person. With a DeSantis, you know, is he not? He's not Trump, and you know, he may use a language. You know, I think God has called me to this position. Whatever, you know, I just think politicians say what we want to say to get people to like us and to follow us, but we just got to be careful that we don't just buy that any one person, woman or man, is the solution to America's ills. I think it is going back to what is the foundation of America. It is that we are a nation of many, but in that many, we work together. In that many, we fight through the hardest of problems. We find our solutions in the many. We're one out of the many. And when we I think that's all through Scripture. It's not about David was only a king for so long. Saul was only a king for so long. Solomon was only a king. But all of them ran into the danger of, well, when you read the Proverbs, you get where Solomon all of a sudden kind of loses his ideal of I'm here because of God. Even though he starts out with God, Solomon loses the kingdom. The kingdom becomes split under Solomon, who starts out by saying everything that I have has come through the hands of God. And so I just think it's dangerous when any of us believe that we are the savior, we are the chosen Messiah in ourselves, to rectify. And but I think people are gullible enough to say, hey, I believe that. I believe in Pastor Dave. He can fix the world. You know, he can fix the community. That's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And so that's all throughout the scripture. But it was God who just comes by and says, I will have no other God. There will be no other gods. You know, it will always be a nation of people who speak the commands of God in loving your neighbor, fighting for your neighbor, working with your neighbor, being a village together. And when we lose sight of that, you know, when you choose to put all of your trust in a human being, you're just setting yourself up for failure. And that's throughout scripture. And so I just believe that, you know, yes, we need strong leaders and great leaders, but it's not to the point where we just say their job is to heal the nation. No, the healing of the nation is our job. That's how we are to live in this world. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Now, my next question is for you, Tom. As a businessman and entrepreneur, how does this change affect your business and its life cycle? Are you concerned that you could face difficulties in the future or the years to come?
You know, I think what entrepreneurs want is good government. You know, we want the police to protect our facility when we're sleeping at home, and we want the system to operate. And to me, this election is an election where it seems like the system's going to operate again. So to me, as an entrepreneur, I thought, you know, it was a very positive outcome. But, you know, we were talking last time, you know, and it was after the show. We weren't actually talking during the show, but you guys said it was like too soon to forgive for African-American people. Both of you said that. It hit me really hard. You guys just barely mentioned it, but I thought about it all week. And, you know, and I don't know what it's like, obviously, but I came to the conclusion in my own heart that I wouldn't be able to forgive either. You know, I mean, it would be too soon for me. And so that made me just feel like totally pathetic. You know, I was wrong about everything that I was asking you guys to do. And I apologize for everything my community had done to your community. But that now it's more like I'm apologizing to you for a lot of stuff I said in this. I'm thinking back on it, and I don't feel quite as comfortable with some of the things I said where you need to forgive so we can make democracy work. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of what I feel in my heart right now about Trump and all of this is I just feel a tremendous optimism that we can work together without forgiveness. You know, mm-hmm. It's like I'm not forgiving, but I see that we have to work together anyway. And forgiveness is out there. It can happen. Mm-hmm. It may happen someday. It can't happen yet because it's a human heart. We can't change that. Mm-hmm. But even if we don't forgive or really completely get there, completely in your heart, I still think that, you know, maybe we can work together even on a, you know. But to me, the scripture that describes democracy is when Jesus says, if you have an offering and you have anger in your heart,
right,
don't go back. Settle that, then bring your offer.
Mm-hmm. You know, Tom, that when you make that line of there's possibility to still work together, but the forgiveness have not taken place. I think that's what leads to true forgiveness. You know, artificial forgiveness is okay. I'm sorry. You know, I think we use that.
Yeah,
that,
like Justin Bieber said, can we just say the words and forget this? Yeah. You know, that's how I felt like Justin Bieber. Can we just say the words and forget this? It's like, no, dude, we cannot, okay?
Right. We want to be able to – I still think about Rwanda when I went back in 2006 and they were just doing their national campaign on tribal reconciliation. And it was the Hutus and the Tutsis and – but they started building communities together, and these where you had to live in community with the person who killed your loved one, you know. And I just didn't think. I remember when I was there in 06 and I saw that happen, and I'm going, how in the world can the guy who killed my child or my wife build a house next door? What I learned from them is that forgiveness comes through living out what you're saying you want, how you live it out together. And it isn't just I shower you with forgiveness. It just says, I no longer want to kill you, you know, for killing my loved one. I'm still deeply wounded from what you did to me. But, you know, if we need to build, you know, a water reservoir that will take care of all of us in this community, let's build the water reservoir, because you need water, I need water. But it isn't, you know, it's building the reservoir, it's building the school, it's building the new business, that we come to realize you do have a love for me or my survival. I do have a love for your survival, that we're able, I think, to come to that place of forgiveness. And I think forgiveness is it happens through the journey. When it happens through the journey, it becomes real forgiveness. And I think that's what America has been doing. We've been able to work through some stuff until we were able to forgive each other. But we didn't artificially just say, OK, I forgive you, you know, for whatever we did. And yeah, I think that's real.
And that's the Trump's frustration right there. It's like, how come I haven't been forgiven yet? Yeah. I feel like I've done everything I need to do. How come you can't just say the words and forget this?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And an explanation for that, you know.
That's a whole nother one. Yeah.
Yep.
But I mean, essentially to me, that's what the Trump message is.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, I was like,
understood.
You guys, and I definitely apologize for that. I think it was kind of insensitive on my part. So.
No.
Just an opinion.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom. Now, will anybody ever win this political tug of war, or is it going to be in this perpetual state of a stalemate?
Well, I will say real quick, I like the field that I happen to live my life in a theological perspective. There will always be tension. It's how do we deal with the tension? You know, we live in a world that has, everybody doesn't see through the same lens, but right. We still have to find a way to live in this tension. And so for Christians, we are never to settle settle that tension with hatred and animosity and pain and the taking from the other one just to have our way. That is not the way we are to live out our lives. And so to live in a world that is tension, I live in a world that is tension with a faith in God that I do not understand even right now. I will still do my best to do good. I will still do my best to be a part of a reconciling world, not a world that I'm saying you must be what I want overnight. That's what our faith is. Our faith is everything in this world would never, there are things that will, Jesus even says, for the poor will always be with you. But it doesn't mean we are to not think about continuing to work for the have poverty alleviated. It's just saying it will still, greed is still here, you know, and while greed is still here, we still have a responsibility to help those who are not being fed, those who have extra or resources, share your resources. And I think that's how I look at the parties. I don't think we'll ever all have a kumbaya moment, but I do think we can have moments of, in the tension that exists, we can still do some good stuff. I believe that. That's the faith.
We had layoffs this week, you know, and the relationship between the employee and the employer is a very difficult one. It's a contentious one. And there's no way in the world to know what's right. You know, how much should they get paid versus how much I should get paid?
Yeah.
There's no real way to know what that is. And so what it is, it's just stalemate, right? Where, you know, you push back and they push back and they push back, but you still have to ship the product.
Yeah. Right?
You know, so I'm saying, you know, we can't have democracy without forgiveness. It's like, well, you operate your company that way. Why can't you, you know, it's like, yeah, there's this tension between management and the workers, and nobody knows what's right, right? We don't know what's really the right spot where it should be. We know that this isn't right. And we know that this isn't right. But in here, we don't really know. So it's a constant, you know, stalemate. And that's okay. That's what life is. Life is a stalemate. And
yeah, can we live in that stalemate without murdering each other? Can we live in that stalemate without
demanding that the other person forgive you?
Yes. Yes. Mm. And I think we can. I just think we can.
It's business.
It's, yeah.
And it's our responsibility to the system. It's the responsibility of the people coming later. So I think stalemate is okay. I think that's
right.
All right. Well, how do we encourage rational, moderate people to run for office?
You know, Jordan, when I read that question, I'm not one much in telling people to run for office. I ask people to there's an old hymn in the hymn books that says brighten the corner where you are. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm more about asking people to live the best world that they can in the corner that they occupy and allow that to be your momentum, you know, versus I'm always scared when somebody says, when I become a senator, then I will care for my community and care for my counties and whatever. No, you care for your counties and your communities right now. You start at the grassroots and you know, things that you can help improve, be a part of improving. Don't be a part of taking, be a part of giving, be a part of building, not a part of tearing down. And that for me will open the door as you are, I think, showing that among your peers. It will be your peers who will say, would you come up? Will you take the next level up? But I'm personally, this is a me personal. I would never tell someone, you know, I think you need to run for office. I just don't. I just think people need to be a part of their communities and brighten the corner right where they are and allow God and their own consciousness to determine, is this ready to be at the next level? You know, I must say this because right now I am so hurt how we're dealing with Herschel Walker. I'm not supporting his position, but he's still a human being. I do not like people just jumping on this bandwagon of just it's easy to bash a man who's down. It's so easy, you know.
But my answer really ties in with that is if you want better people to run for office, make the experience of running for office, make the experience of being in the office better.
Yes. There you
don't go. Don't trash Herschel Walker like you're doing. And don't investigate President Biden's son. If you want better people in office, don't try to throw their son in jail.
Yeah, that's just crazy. So, that's it. I just go, you do better. You know, let the people.
Make the experience better of being in office and running for office, and you'll get better people.
You'll get better people.
Basic business stuff. Absolutely. Make the environment better to work there, and you'll get better people. Everybody knows this, right?
Right. Any final thoughts, guys? Anything you want to throw in there before we wrap up today's episode?
Oh, the fight ain't over. I just go, you know, it's just today we just turned the page, but there's much work we need to do with one another. I think in seeing each other as human beings. Seeing a nation as we are a nation of people, and we're going to have to continue to fight one for another the best that we can. This isn't the magic bullet or the magic day for some and hurtful to others. I just think we just got work to do. It just tells you how deep we need work. We're going to have to work. Yeah.
I just appreciate both of you going on this journey with me. And I just feel like I've gotten so much out of it. And absolutely. I feel like I really changed this week. My outlook on life is different than it was 2 weeks ago.
Well, Tom, thank you for providing. You're the provider for this platform. And I hope everybody knows that we're here through you. And it has made me think more about things I don't readily think about because it's so easy to only think about the things that you're sure about. Mm-hmm. Versus to think about things that, hey, you need to think about this as well. So
yeah, it's outside the comfort zone, right?
This is outside the comfort zone.
Yeah, yes, I'm just here so I don't get fined. All right, guys. The midterms are over, and in no time, we will be voting for a new president. We will need faith in each other more than ever to navigate the way forward, because the noise will only get louder as 2024 approaches. We must hold on to the hope that moderate voters and rational thinking will be the glue that holds our democracy together. The right and the left must find a way to move forward and work together, even without forgiveness. So that we can start a journey towards true forgiveness. Let's all do something this week to start on that journey. It begins with your neighbors, your family, your friends, your coworkers. Let's build some faith in each other. And of course, I want to thank you guys, Pastor Dave and Tom, for being here. And of course, I want to thank all our viewers out there. And we'll see you next time on Faith in Each Other. Thank you so much for listening to Faith in Each Other. I hope today's conversation encourages you in your journey to have hard conversations and, most importantly, to listen to others around you. If we're going to have faith in each other, I believe we need to be willing to have hard conversations, and that is what we aim to do on this show. We will see you next time on Faith in Each Other. If you enjoyed this show, please share it with someone you know. See you next time.